Never too young to learn, never too young to lead, never too young to build, never too young to chase a dream. You, my friend, are never too young.
Welcome to the podcast Never Too Young Radio, where student entrepreneurs talk about their experiences, the aspiring ones to learn. So again, I am your host and welcome you with a new episode of NTYR. Today, we have Harish Sayakumar with us.
Harish is a student at the BITS Pilani Goa campus, an engineer by education, an entrepreneur by passion, and a content creator by interest. Harish has worn many hats. He's the co-founder of BlueLearn, which is one of India's largest student communities for learning, networking, and events. Welcome to the podcast, Harish.
Thanks, guys. Super pumped to be here and thanks for the introduction. Pretty kind of you.
So, Harish, tell us, how does starting up and working on your business from Goa feel like?
I would say it's different. It's kind of the same thing because even if I just go out there and say that I study in Goa, it's pretty much like any other college. I do, you know, be in my hostel room for most of the times of the day. So I wouldn't say it's super different. Just like right now I'm in Nasik, so it's pretty similar to working out of Nasik. And also I think when I was in college, it just sort of gave me a foundation. As it day one se mujhe entrepreneur nahi banna tha, it was more of a gradual step, you know, like working on a bunch of projects, working on internships and things like that. So that way, college, Goa, things like that contributed. But then if you're talking just from the startup perspective, then I am working remote right now. So it didn't make a huge difference. Weekends, mate, was fun.
Yeah, definitely. Let's go after all, right? So Rogan and I were talking that we have seen your TEDx youth talk, right? And we both follow you on LinkedIn. So one thing which we have noticed is that you try to focus on constant ideation and trying to work on it, right? While we understand the importance of constant ideation and the need to work on it, I somehow feel it is also very important to be able to distinguish an idea which is not worth it. Right. How do you do that?
So in all honesty, I don't think too much before pursuing an idea. At least I did not when I got started. So, you know, there have been so many times when I failed terribly. But I think you really require these failures because you get to learn so many things when you fail, right? For example, the very first time I started earning money in college was when I started freelancing. I started doing graphic design for a bunch of clients in the US. The thing that I learned there was that US clients pay you a lot for doing less amount of work. And then I was like, oh, damn, I'm making a lot of money, $1,000 a month. This is so cool. I'm still in college. Why not just do it, regularly? And then I thought to myself and I was like, Harish, do you want to become a graphic designer for the next 10 years of your life? And my answer was no, I want to do something bigger. I want to like have a major impact. So I just left that job. So that was like, you know, one learning doing stuff. The second one would be we started a chatbot company called Hulock, where, you know, we were sort of servicing other clients. We were helping them out with building websites, you know, taking care of the digital campaigns, building chatbots for them. But then it was more of a services business and we did not really want to become like the next Infosys or TCS where we just, you know, do different kinds of services for different clients. So it was fun. It was a 1 year stint. We made a little bit of money, but then again, wasn't satisfying enough. So I think when you just have a lot of these projects, which sort of fail, I wouldn't say fail, but after a point, you're just burnt out and you're like, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. You do need these projects. Like my first internship, it wasn't good. The boss was terrible. But then I had to go through it and that taught me a lot of things. So yeah, I'm more of the wing it guy. I just go there, you know, pursue it and see if I like it. If it's bad, then I just move on. I don't think too much. I just take any opportunity that I get.
All right. Reminds me of the conversation we had with another student entrepreneur, Yugansh Chopra, which is also our first episode. And I think we had this conversation with him that there was this, the key term was multi-potentialite. That multi-potentialites often, you know, they do one thing, they try it out, they move to another, and that's how they figure out what their interest is. And that's a very interesting process because it gives you a hands-on experience on a lot of different things, plus helps you identify your interests. Which, you know, if I switch gears a bit, I wanted to ask you, what should be one's steps after they get an idea? How do you think they should test it out? A method, for example, is the cold shower test, where you ask yourself the worst possible questions while taking a shower. So what are some other ways and methods you think which are important to take while you're ideating?
I mean, in the initial days, you can just follow the simple build, measure, learn loop, right? For example, during HeLock days, we want to see if there's a demand for chatbots. So, you know, we read a bunch of blogs. We knew that there is some sort of demand because few companies are using it. And then we want to test it out and see if it works out in India, if it works out in a place like Goa, right? So what we did was we just went to Chatfuel, which is a no-code platform. Took us 5 minutes to build a chatbot. We did not write a single line of code, just built a very scrappy MVP. I called up a bunch of hotels. Me and my co-founder, we went to those hotels, showed a demo to the manager, and we were like, would you pay for this? And they were like, no. Right. And then that was a quick feedback loop. Within a week, we knew that we were building something that hotels never wanted in the first place. So I would say, you know, just build a very scrappy MVP, call up your potential customers, take some feedback, ask them if they would actually use this and if it'll, you know, make their life 10x better. If they say no, then just leave it and go on to your next idea. If they say yes, then you're on to something.
Right. I recently also read about the build, measure, and learn loop, like what you talked about. So is that what you did for Blue Learn, previously Clinify, right? So take us through your journey of how you got the idea for Blue Learn and how you decided to test it out.
So here's the thing. In terms of Blue Learn, what happened was it was more of a side project. It was never my full-time job, right? And I never even expected it to become my full-time job at any point in life. We were running HeLock. We were, you know, pitching to clients every single day, having a bunch of meetings. All of these were B2B meetings with other businesses, seeing how we could add value to their organizations. And on the side, I was like, hey, why not just help out students by building a community, right? Because I already have a YouTube channel and the Discord server would be a good place where people can come in. We can organize a bunch of events and give them some sort of exposure because, you know, a lot of tier two, tier three college students don't really have exposure. The colleges are just they're just a building. They don't do much. So we thought, you know, this online medium through which we can give them access to good quality events and speakers. That was the ultimate purpose. And it started growing suddenly, right? We started hitting 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 milestones pretty quick. And I was like, hey, this is something interesting. And the community space, the creator economy space back in 2020, last year, was booming because of the pandemic. And it was in a rise. And the current business, which we were doing, HeLock, or the chatbots, it was plummeting, right? Every client was saying no. And we were students trying to pitch to other businesses. They didn't really trust us. And then, you know, the deals weren't going through. Lots of issues. Though we learned a lot, the business wasn't going that well. So we thought, hey, you know, this is something that HeLock was purely for money, right? All we wanted to do was earn some monthly recurring revenue and become slightly rich. That's all we wanted to do. There wasn't really a problem that we were trying to solve. But in terms of Clinify or Blue Learn, we had a solid, compelling problem to look after, which was to give exposure to students and sort of upskill them. And that was fun. So we sort of, you know, once we, all of us got on a call, we were like, hey, let's put HeLock on the side, take a break from it for at least a month, and then try doing something with Clinify. And then, yeah, then it's been, then we never started working on HeLock.
All right. So, you know, if you look at Blue Learn now, it's a massive community. It has, I think, 40,000 members, more than 40,000 members from different colleges, all Gen Z. And I mean, how did you picture it when you started it? What was your vision of Clinify as a brand or as a community?
We wanted to make a learning community where, you know, anyone can just join in. So here's the thing. In India, people are supposed to give these entrance exams like GE, at least in the engineering field. Maybe it's different for you guys. And I don't know, some 8 lakh people give GE, some huge number, out of which a couple of thousand people get into IITs, BITs, NITs, and a bunch of these good colleges and get placed at great companies. They get good exposure. They have a good alumni network and blah, blah, blah. The rest get into really shitty colleges that no one cares about, right? And there's this huge disparity in the way colleges function in India. So we were like, I mean, why is this one entrance exam called JEE determining their, you know, future life? That just doesn't make sense. If someone's really interested in graphic design and if they are super passionate about it, then why not just give them the tools through which they can get access to more opportunities and make a living out of it? So that was a core thesis. It was to bring out more exposure and like help those narrow-minded people sort of broaden their perspective and understand that there are a lot of ways of making money. There are a lot of opportunities out there. All you have to do is look out for them and sort of network and meet smart people, and at the same time learn relevant skills that are required in the industry. So that was the core thesis, to help these kind of students out and to ultimately help them lead a better life in spite of whatever degree they're pursuing or whatever college they are in.
Understood. So like Savika said, it is now a community of more than 40,000 members, right? So how did you manage to scale it up? And I'm asking this with regards to the team building as well as servicing the member requirements.
Yeah, so in terms of growth, we follow two growth channels. The first one is definitely content production. So we are super heavy on content production. We have a team working on it every single day, coming up with new ideas, seeing what, you know, people might like, people might not like, things like that. And second is word of mouth, right? So we make sure that we have an NPS score where people just talk about the product with their friends. Like, for example, if you organize a team event where you're supposed to come in a team and give a quiz, then people tend to call in their friends and make them join the community. So that's one way of growing. Second is, you know, if you organize really high quality event, like yesterday we were streaming Nitin Kamath's talk from Stoa School. And that sort of quality event is not something that people from normal colleges get access to. So they might have told their friends and brought them onto the community. So that's the second part that we focus on. And in terms of team building, I've been super lucky. Majority of our recruits come from the community itself. So if someone has actually used the product, if someone has attended all our events, a bunch of events, if someone understands the vibe of the community, we hire them. So we rolled out like moderator applications and just hired people who are super active in the community, and that has panned out pretty well. So right now we had like a team of 15, out of which 9 were actually hired from the community itself.
All right. Sounds interesting. I wanted to ask you, you started out with a major medium for you guys was your Discord channel. So till what extent were you able to capitalize through Discord? Because, you know, Discord is not the most official way of leveraging a community.
Yeah, so we tried out a bunch of platforms. We started off with WhatsApp, later realized it was the worst decision we could have ever taken. Then we went to Telegram, and Telegram again is just spam. It's linear chat. So sab ek sa chat karte and then it just gets cluttered. So we moved to Discord, which turned out to be a pretty good decision. But then again, Discord is not something that's owned by us, right? So if one day Discord plans to ban our server, it's gone. So we didn't want that to happen. So we have kind of diversified across platforms, YouTube, Instagram, WhatsApp, Telegram, quite diverse in that terms. But we are working on something of our own, right? So it's not something that will completely replace Discord, because Discord has its own advantages and disadvantages. It's a $7 billion company. We don't want to compete with them. Like, that just doesn't make sense. We don't want to build another community building app. But at the same time, tackle problems that Discord cannot, you know, sort of tackle. For example, events, right? On Discord, it's hard to find the schedule of events. It's hard to find ki kya hone wala hai, or joining different clubs and communities and having meetups with them. It's hard to discover new stuff on Discord. So solving for those issues on the app / website. So that's what we're planning to do. It's complementary more than going against Discord. So community ke kuch aspects would remain on Discord, while a few good aspects of it, which Discord cannot provide, will be on the app. And the app should be launched in like the next 3 months. We're just experimenting with a bunch of things, seeing what works out well, and then migrating that onto the app.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to know, you know, what are your future plans when it comes to Blue Run? Because I read you're going to come up with certain tech products soon. So what's the blueprint and what are your plans regarding that?
So we're super optimistic of a new product called Blue Clubs, which are micro niche communities on like for a bunch of topics, right? For example, it could be right now we launched English Club. Tomorrow we might launch, you know, fitness. We might launch, finance club, blockchain club, coding club, a bunch of these, so that students can actually meet other people and get to network among people who are driven just like them. So that's our second one. It's like, you know, recreating college clubs in a much more organized way onto a platform.
Understood. And the startup recently got funded, right? And congratulations on that. Now the scaling up process should be easier for you as compared. But talking about funding, how was your fundraising process? as a student, how was your experience, right? And do you think the industry professionals have an edge over students when it comes to raising funds?
Yeah, so this is super interesting because, you know, we were talking to Kunal Bell, the founder of Snapdeal, and we asked him that what makes you invest in student founders, because he has done quite a few, you know, student founder investments. And he said, dude, like when I look at student founders for the very first time, I think they're naive. I think they're super young and, you know, immature kind of things. But when they start their pitch deck and when they show me results, numbers, saying that, hey, I've gone out there and proven, that's what strikes me. And that's what, you know, tells me that these guys have this energy, this insane energy that, you know, even working professionals might not have. They have a very unique insight into a lot of things. They have a very fresh perspective and not a biased one that most working professionals have. So I think that kind of made sense because, you know, as youngsters, we haven't really had that experience in the corporate ladder or things like that, which might cause some biases. So the way we tackle problems is by looking at, you know, the overall structure and then sort of coming up with solutions. So that's what he said. And that kind of made sense for us. But yeah, ultimately, no matter if you're a student or a working professional, all that VC is scared about is results. So if you have 100,000 users who are actively using your product every single month, and if you show that, and if you're 16, and if you show that to Sequoia, they might fund you if it's compelling enough. So I'm really glad that the VC ecosystem has matured enough that they really don't care about the age as long as the problem that you're solving is compelling enough.
Definitely. And I think it has grown a lot in the past few years. And it's set to grow tremendously in the coming years as well. But again, talking about funding, how was your experience when Blue Lung got funded? How was your experience during the funding round?
Yeah, so it was a great experience. We learned so much about economics, finance, legal, compliance, accounting. And then the last 3 months, it just feels like an MBA, short course of an MBA. In our case, honestly, like 3 months back, we were really, really pessimistic about Blue Lung. You know, we were growing slightly, but no one was actually believing in the vision that we had, right? We'd got rejected by two really major VC funds. They didn't reject us. They were like, you're too early, things like that. I mean, that's their way of saying no. And that sort of put us down. We were like, hey, are we really solving a problem? Is this a company that could, you know, become like a unicorn maybe sometime in the future? We were really, really pessimistic. And we were, in fact, thinking of even dropping the idea at one point in time. We were just planning to keep it as a side project because we had compromised a lot. We almost gave up on our academics. We had spent like 80% of our day on Blue Lung. And then again, like at the end of the day, we weren't getting anything out of it, like no revenues, no investor support, nothing. And that's when, you know, Watsal from 100X, he texted me once and he was like, dude, I saw that you shifted from Hulock to Clinify. Do you want to have a chat? And then 100X was the same VC firm that rejected Hulock when we pitched it to them the very first time. And then Watsal was like, do you want to just catch up? Not from a funding perspective, but just to, you know, have a chat about what you're building. We had the call, you know, next 3 days was pretty smooth. We had a bunch of meetings. And the fourth day, they gave us a term sheet, which was a very, very huge morale booster, right? Because we were at the brink of giving up and these guys sort of trusted us. And that to students in third year of college. So pretty grateful for that. That was a great morale boost, you know, told us that, hey, you know, it's something worth pursuing. And then we sort of, you know, took that up full time. And then later on, a month later, you know, other VC firms joined in and it's been a great journey. It's good to have supporters. So in business, right, there's this state where I think it's called the living dead state. Where you're like, where you don't have motivation to do anything because the business is slightly growing, but its revenues, its growth and all of that is pretty stale because none of you guys are motivated enough to do the mission, right? Like people say, follow the vision, follow the mission. But then after a certain point in time, you might get burnt out and you might just be like, hey, Abhi, let's just continue. Zyada kuch motivation nahi hai. I don't have the motivation to do 2x of what I did yesterday. But then when you have investor pressure, when you have like a bunch of investors who are banking on you, it puts, I wouldn't say pressure, but it just motivates you to do something better so that, you know, you can sort of raise your next round and things like that. And I think that's the push that we actually needed. And that's kind of helping us out as well. So yeah, that's how our journey has been.
Harish, I wanted to know, you know, if you look at Blue Lung is a part of somewhat a crowded space, right? You have a lot of other student communities as well. And there are a lot of other startups which are focusing on skill building. I mean, skill building, especially for students, is the hot topic, even when it comes to edtech. So how are you trying to differentiate when it comes to, you know, with your competitors?
Yeah, good question. So we don't want to become a boring edtech company. Like from day one, that's been our thesis. We don't want to become a company which hires student ambassadors and asks them to spam WhatsApp messages saying, hey, buy this course. We don't even want to become a course selling company. We want to become a learning community. And that's been our motto from day one. It just has to become this cool, fun place for students to hang out at and learn something at the end of the day. It's like, you know, when you go on Instagram, you feel guilty because you haven't learned anything. It doesn't feel that productive. So if you spend an hour on Instagram, though it's addictive, you know, you have that guilt feeling later on, right? But we want people who visit Blue Learn to be like, hey, today I learned something and I also had fun at the same time. It was as interesting as Instagram. I met new people, but at the same time, it sort of helped me in my development as well. So that's the feeling we want to bring on to students. And even though we, you know, portray ourselves as student communities right now, we want to sort of expand as well. So right now, we would be focusing on college students, sort of monopolizing on that market, and then eventually going on to early working professionals as well. So that's the target audience that we're trying to tackle. It's like, you know, Gen Z, youngsters, things like that. And yeah, so we just want to be cooler than the rest. And it's more community driven than edtech driven.
All right. Yeah, I mean, community driven brings me to a very, you know, a very relevant question. Maven got funded recently. I think they raised Series C. And it is a cohort based learning platform. And I think I saw a post of yours as well, which was focusing on cohort-based learning and how it is the future, not only in just the edtech space, but, you know, even, you know, in the influencer space, if you see, there are startups coming up which are trying and helping certain influencers are able to make their own community, startups like Tag Mango, etc. What do you think? I mean, what is the future of cohort-based learning in the edtech landscape?
Yeah, I mean, really optimistic about cohort-based learning because cohort-based learning is just like learning in a school, right? Where you have a teacher, you have live interaction, you can interact with your peers, but it's an online format of that. And that's how learning should be. It just like people who take cohort-based courses, 99% of the time they do complete it, right? Unlike other forms of online education. So really optimistic about it. Though we are not focusing solely on cohort-based learning, it's sort of like an integration onto the platform. It's like an additional thing for sure. But yeah, we aren't just a cohort-based learning platform. It's like just part of a few of these clubs. So the future would be a lot of these creators using cohort-based classes as a way of monetizing their work, right? For example, Abhi and Niu recently launched a graphite course about video production, right? And they have a large enough audience. And if they have a high price tag, then there would be a certain 1% of the audience which would actually pay for it. And that'll be like an additional stream of revenue for them. This way, they control how much they earn because advertisers, that's variable. Brand partnerships, that's also variable. You have no control. But cohort-based courses, you have 100% control, right? So you'll see a lot of these content creators actually using platforms like Graphy, using platforms like Maven to launch their own courses, live interactive courses, and sort of use that as a monetization method for their creator economy.
So, right, while talking about cohort-based learning, you also mentioned how creators are coming up with their own courses, right? So for example, you mentioned Abhi and Niu, right? So, you have your own YouTube channel, right? And you've been pretty active on YouTube. And your videos are also mostly in the student space, and you've garnered a lot of audience. So, what is the reason behind starting your own YouTube channel, and how has this creative outlet also helped you in your growth, both personally and professionally?
The reason I started YouTube channel was just to express myself. Like, I've been an introvert and I saw YouTube as a way of, you know, telling the world about my life. And it's been a good journey. I think I started my YouTube channel back in ninth grade with a bunch of friends. That time it was just a casual thing. But then in college, I started sort of sharing things that I learned. You know, it's said, right? When you teach something, you learn it better. So YouTube was a medium for me to teach people about what I've learned. So it could be like a new business technique or a marketing strategy or things like that. But then soon I moved into college. I started vlogging inside college. That was pretty cool. I got inspired by, I think, Elliot Choi, and I started vlogging in college. And that sort of took off, and then started giving college advice and sharing a bunch of things that I learned in college and stuff like that. So Professionally, it's been great because it just helped me build a personal brand on the side. And then at the same time, it gives me a bit of satisfaction that I was able to help some students get some sort of exposure into different fields like freelancing.
This is actually very interesting to know, because you told that you were an introvert and suddenly you were talking to millions of people on YouTube.
Yeah.
And you started way back in ninth grade.
Ninth grade pe shuru kiya tha, but then it was very casual. Then ninth grade ke baad we took a break and we started in college. So yeah.
I wanted to ask you, do you think your tremendous social media presence helped you with BlueLearn in any regards?
For sure. People want to follow people. People don't want to follow brands unless it's Zomato. So it's like, that's been the core principle, right? Like, take an example of Elon Musk. Most of his businesses run because of his personal influence. He has crazy amount of influence. He puts out one tweet about the new Tesla and it gets sold out. Jeff Bezos, for example, a lot of these founders are becoming content creators nowadays. And it's just crazy to see this massive shift from brands to people, right? I'm kind of optimistic about founders sort of being content creators, at least one of the founders. And it just helps you in the initial days, maybe not in the later stages, but in the initial stages, it definitely helps you gain some trust. And also, I talk about this thing called the digital identity, where especially after the pandemic, you don't really come to know about a person by meeting them at a cafe. It's more of like looking at their LinkedIn profile or Instagram profile and then forming a judgment about who they are, right? And numbers, like, it's a hard truth, but they matter. Like if someone has 100,000 followers, then there's this mental framing that just tells you that this person has some significance in the world. So I think that really has this, there's this signaling effect that happens when people look at your profiles, and then having a strong personal brand definitely helps you in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I agree, because in the last year and this year as well, we've seen a lot of content creators becoming entrepreneurs themselves. And I think that will ultimately become a significant part of the population as well, as in while going ahead. Right.
Yeah, I was recently reading this thing about angel investing, where people like Tanmay Bhatt will become crazy angel investors, right? Tanmay Bhatt, angel investor in Smallcase, FamPay, a bunch of these companies. And he was able to get these good deals because people know about him. Not all VC firms are well known. They aren't like popular on YouTube or something like that. So when young people are starting companies, in fact, we want to get Tanmay as an angel investor, but maybe that's for the next round. But it's just crazy because these are the people who are on social media. These are the people whom we see every single day. So people are saying that these content creators would someday become better angel investors, because if you're starting a company tomorrow, you might have heard of Tanmay Bhatt, but then say a random angel investor who's rich, you might have never heard of him. So, you know, that sort of gives them better deals, and deal flow is all that matters in angel investing.
That's what you call as social capital. That's that key term. I actually read an article about it, and it was mentioned that how, a lot, not only, content creators, but a lot of A-listers, Bollywood celebrities, they are all getting into, they're not just becoming brand ambassadors nowadays. They're actually investing in those companies so that they're able to make the most out of it.
And at the end of the day, content creation, I think it takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of energy, and more importantly, a lot of creativity is put behind it. So anyone can open a YouTube channel, but getting across a YouTube channel to some 1,000 followers, 1,000 views is a big deal, right? And it takes some effort regarding that.
And they also have distribution, right? For example, Tanmay Bhatt promotes FamPay. It is one of his portfolio companies, and that drives a lot of installs for them, right? It's one of the major growth channels for them. So when people ask, when good companies actually ask investors, ki, what do you bring on the table? Why, we don't need money, but then what do you bring on the table to give you equity? And most investors would be like, we'll give you support, we'll give you value, and all of those vague terms. Well, Tanmay Bhatt could just say, I'll give you distribution, I'll give you customers straight up, right?
If I, shift the topic, coming back to communities, okay, because we were talking about BlueLearn. Startups nowadays are capitalizing on communities, right? If you look at, from categories like social commerce to something like BlueLearn, everyone is capitalizing on communities, right? How vital do you think are communities for startups these days?
It's super vital. You need some super followers who would actually spread the word of mouth, would be your first few customers, would be, you know, test out your products, give you feedback. You just need that community aspect, right? Without that, it'll become a lonely journey. Take an example of Postman, right? Postman is a $2 billion company, and they have so many developers who actually use that. It grew because of the community presence. So developers have a very tight-knit community. They told other developers about the product, you know, that, hey, I'm using Postman. And that just helped them in organic growth with like almost zero marketing spend. So CAC, customer acquisition cost, is becoming really expensive. And a lot of companies are realizing that if they don't have communities, if they don't have a loyal fan base, then it's just going to become really expensive. Just running ads is like throwing money at YouTube and Facebook, but not getting results at the end of the day. So I think building communities is super important. And people really want to like have a human element with the brand. It's not just a transaction. It's there should be more to it. And that's what communities actually provide.
Exactly. And I think it helps out in the brand building part as well. Because at the end of the day, if I am associated with Lunar and I'm associated with the community, then at the end of the day, if someone talks to me anything regarding that, so I'll be in a position to defend that. No, okay, I'm associated with it and I'll have a feeling of belongingness that way.
What in your opinion is a very good way to hold a community?
Yeah. So I think tech is also broad. Let's just dive a bit deep. Let's say B2B and B2C, right? In terms of B2B startups, it's more about networking with the right kind of people. They don't need to have meetups. They don't need to have a Discord server, none of that. They can just be part of relevant communities inside other businesses. Like, you know, if I'm into finance, if I'm selling to other finance companies, then attending conferences which have other finance professionals coming in, you know, building networks with other fintech companies and my potential customers, having a B2B podcast, things like that, right? That could actually help them build a community within other business owners, because that's their target audience. So it's all about like building connections with their potential customers. In the B2C space, it's a bit different. So here, making Discord servers, like FamPay, let's take an example of FamPay. They have meetups. They have this ambassador program where you can promote financial literacy in your college. They have a Discord server. They have a bunch of these, you know, giveaways and things like that, which actually promote people coming onto the app. They have gaming tournaments which happen on their Discord server. So things that help their customer base stay engaged with each other, and meet each other and sort of get associated with the brands. They also, you could even sponsor a lot of community events, right? Like if a college is hosting a fest, then sponsoring that event could bring in a really good experience. Like in our college, we had this pretty good DJ. I think once Nuclea came in, right, at our college, and he was performing. And one of the sponsors was Realme, the phone. And that's the brand that they had put at the top. And when people were having the best times of their life, when they were grooving to good music, they saw the Realme branding. And when you're super happy when you see a brand, that's something that you remember forever. Like it's been so many years, but I still remember, right? So it's like bringing in those aspects. I know I spoke very specific to colleges, but I think these are a couple of ways through which you can build good communities.
No, but I agree with you. I think the main word here is engagement. Like to engage with your audience, that's what keeps them together, right? Be it anywhere, and for a different startup, for a different brand, it might be some different kind of engagement which keeps them together. But I think the main thing which you have to look at is engagement.
This is the exact thing that, you know, the head of growth at Facebook said, right? When they were growing Facebook, retention was much more important for them than growth. Like they could have a billion users, but if only 1,000 people are using the product, there's no use, right? So they want to have like, even if they had only 2,000 users, they want to make sure that at least say 90% of them use the product on a daily basis. So I think when you focus on retention and engagement, then growth automatically happens in a bit.
I agree with you. And now I think it is time for a very exciting part of the podcast, the Never Too Quick Round. Just like you guys, there is fun, so there is questions and answers for these can never be quick enough, but you can surely give it a try. Are you ready for this, Harish?
Yeah, sure. I'm panicking.
The first question to you would be, what would you choose? Solopreneurship or entrepreneurship?
Entrepreneurship.
Apart from a student community, which other space do you think is exciting for creating a community?
Fintech.
What is the best part about getting funded?
Flex rights.
Yeah, definitely. I think it comes along with that. Yeah.
What's the worst part about content creation?
Creative block.
Okay. Which startup or CEO inspires you the most?
Richard Branson.
And why?
He drives the company alone, dude. He has a bunch of subsidiaries and he's a stuntman. He's going to go to space soon. So yeah, he's a very cool personality.
And what about someone from India?
Someone from India? Ritesh Agarwal.
What do you think is the best and worst thing about Gen Z?
Best thing is they're the early adopters. Worst thing is they can't pay a lot.
Okay. I thought you would be saying that they're immature. But in the worst thing.
Nah, it's very mature. Very mature.
Yeah, just kidding. Okay. So what is the one thing students should keep in mind while networking?
Keep it mutual. Don't keep it single-sided.
All right. So you're a tech guy, but apart from tech, what's that one skill that excites you a lot and you want to pick it up?
Design.
So what's your dream university for a master's degree?
I don't believe in masters. I mean, at least for me, it doesn't make sense. But then if I had to choose a university, I would go with Stanford because it's close to Silicon Valley.
One word you have for the future of India's edtech space?
Don't be boring.
Describe Discord in one line.
Gen Z.
Okay, this one question, we ask this to everyone since we call student entrepreneurs. What changes do you suggest in Indian colleges to foster the culture of entrepreneurship amongst students?
Profs who have never worked in a company or a startup should not teach. Because we all talk about this disconnect, right? So unless we have profs who have actually worked at good companies and understand what the industry is, you could never solve for the gap.
All right. Yeah, I mean, you're firing complete bits and you're firing all the professors from all major institutions. No one has had industry experience, I think.
We do have a few good people, but yeah, majority are kind of old school.
Yeah, I think that question marks the end of our never to kick round. Lastly, Harish, what advice would you like to give to budding entrepreneurs?
Just be persistent at it. And also, you know, entrepreneurship has been sort of crafted as something that's risky, right? And in all honesty, it's not. A lot of these entrepreneurs take very intelligent risks. I had a bunch of backups saying, if I fail at this, this is what I'm going to do. If I fail at this, this is what I'm going to do. So have a bunch of backups. It's, you know, it's not necessarily risky. It's not like zero or one. You can always have like a 0.5 or something. So don't consider it to be a risky game. You can always have backups and things like that. There's nothing wrong in that. If I say that, if I don't raise funding in the next 2 months, or if I don't have a good enough revenue in the next month, then I might take up a job. That there's nothing wrong in that, right? Don't defame people who do that. It's totally fine.
All right. I think this marks the end of this wonderful episode. Thank you, Harish, for being a part of this.
Yeah, man. Super fun. Great questions.
Yep, that's our college bell. Need to head back to classes, but these stories and conversations won't stop. See you soon with the next episode of Never Too Young. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.